We here at Amplify Team Training are excited to have Lisa Hughes on as our guest on this podcast. And Lisa, I guess I know you from a couple of different ways, through working on a couple of charity events together over the years with Globe Santa, as well as just sort of being a fan of the broadcast and tuning in pretty much every night for you and David. Is really excited to have you as a guest, because I think what you do is fascinating, and from a number of different ways that I love to get into. You know, the first is just when we tune in to the news, in particular the broadcast I watch, which is the 11 o'clock news, it's you and David, and that's what we see. But there is a whole team behind that that we don't see, that makes it, I'm sure, seamless. And I know you've got a producer in one ear, and there's all sort of stuff going on. And if it's breaking news, there's things going on. So I'd love to talk with you a little bit about how that team runs, and, you know, and what makes that special. And then a little bit just around, you know, I think if you donate so much of your time for a lot of different organizations, in many ways you're a very public figure, both for an organization and in many ways a leader of an organization, just because you're kind of at the forefront, but also just as a public figure that people look to. I particularly think in times of crisis or in times of, you know, things are going on, they kind of look to your voice as a leader, particularly here in Boston, of kind of for information. So I know I just gave a huge scattershot of what we might talk about, but I'm fascinated to have you on as a guest. So.
Well, I am delighted to be here. Thanks so much, Chet and Eric, for having me on and for giving me an opportunity to talk about the team. Because you're right. You know, at first, I'm so grateful that you watch at 11. You know, people who stay up late, as a night owl myself, like, I'm so happy when I hear people watch the 11. We want people to watch our newscast no matter what time of day. But I feel like a particular kinship with people who watch at 11, because it means they keep a schedule similar to mine. So
totally.
We're kindred spirits, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But it is true that there really is a whole team behind the show, any given show. And, you know, in the last year and 2 months in the pandemic, the team has been physically fractured because we have not all been able to be in the building together. And yet my feeling about my teammates has never been stronger. You know, I was lucky enough to come in to work at least 5 days a week and sometimes 6 days a week throughout the pandemic. So while I know that often you would turn on the TV over the last year and you would see people working from home, David and I were never those people. And there was a period of time where they considered having us work from home. I have a 9-year-old and a puppy, and that would have been disastrous television beyond the first day. For the first day, it would have been like, oh, isn't that funny? Like, no one in our house sleeps and it's very noisy. And then after that, when it was impossible to understand anything that I was saying, it would have lost its entertainment value.
Or you might have gone viral a lot more.
Maybe, you know, that I, you know, you have seen those where the golden retriever can't leave the shot and you're like, oh, isn't that cute? But like in my case, I'm thinking it might have been less cute. You know, I just can't imagine that it would have gone well. So David and I came in every day, and the executive producer of the 11 o'clock show came in every day, and the producer of The Tent, which is on our sister station, TV 38, and our assignment desk manager. And there would be nights when it would be the five of us in the newsroom, and all the reporters and photographers were working outside the building, putting together their stories in a news car or a van, and the producers were working from home. And, you know, it is one of those experiences and careers that relies so much on other people. You know, you're constantly bouncing ideas off one another, whether it's the word you want to use or the tone of the story or an element that you have to decide whether it's going to be in the story or not. And it's so hard when you're not in the same room and you can't just shout to the person next to you, hey, should we put this in or should this be outboarded into something else? And so it was really challenging, but I feel like my relationships with these people, you know, we were all going through the same thing in real time, and those relationships have only deepened. So I feel like it's going to be interesting as we emerge from this, because we haven't all seen each other in person. Like I just, as I was coming out here, I saw one of my colleagues in the hallway who I haven't seen in person in like 15 months, and where reporters are allowed to be in the building, but only briefly. So she said, you didn't see me. I'm just checking things out and I'm going to go back, you know, to my room over here. You know? But it is just, it's really exciting, the prospect of all being together again and renewing those in-person connections that I do think make the product that much better.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've been talking a lot about that. And that's why, so we've been getting more and more companies contacting us recently with the idea of like, we're getting the band back together. Like, we haven't seen each other in a year. Can we do something to sort of kick that off? And so we're excited to do some of that. But it's funny you mentioned that. We've been talking a lot as well about, you know, I think people have pivoted and shifted and figured out how to make it work virtually. And to some extent, some of that will stay. But I really think some of those lost moments are the moments where you're just, hey, let me run an idea by you. Or I have a thought and I just quickly ask somebody that's by there just to see something, because I'm not going to necessarily take the time to dial them up virtually to see if they're around to run. I'm just going to kind of think it through myself and just go. So I'm excited to have just that person to person contact again, because it's virtual. I mean, certainly the technology is great that it's around to help and to help connect us, but it's just not quite the same. So.
Well, and everyone is getting so many messages, whether it's, you know, email or whether it's Zoom or whether it's text messages, that it almost becomes, if you need an answer immediately, it's almost less efficient because you can't just go to the person and be like, okay, ignore the 850 emails. I want to come to you personally and just ask you X. I get my answer in 10 seconds and I'm gone. You know what I mean? Or we have this conversation,
yeah.
We make a plan and we move on. So I think there are moments where I'm like, oh, you know, I'm so grateful for technology and it saved us in so many ways. And I think the ways in which companies have had to pivot over the last year, ours and every other company, has been pretty remarkable. I mean, I hope when we emerge from this, that people recognize how incredibly resilient we are. You know, I think we all take for granted, because we're all doing it, that this was really hard. And you might have had, you know, personal moments where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe how challenging this is, whether it's, you know, the disconnect you might feel with colleagues, or even like, you know, the stress of, you know, kind of shepherding your kids through their online experiences. But I mean, this was really hard. And I think we should feel really good, particularly in Massachusetts, about how well we handled this.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah.
Lisa, I'm just curious too, like, as your team was going through the pandemic in starting to disperse and work remotely, it's all bubbling up to you, right? For the stories and for the news and what you have to deliver for content every day. What changed for the team, in your opinion? Like, what was hard for them to do remotely? Were there certain or specific breakdowns, or just things that kind of broke down to where things bubbled up that you're like, this would never happen if we were all together and in the office and working together as a team as we always have been?
Yeah, you know, that's an excellent question. So I can think of a few things. For starters, we begin every workday with an editorial meeting, and typically we would all sit around a table. So there'd be 12 of us, and we would hash out story ideas, and we would settle on a story idea, and then we would say, okay, one thing that has to be in there is this, whatever this is one element that's just got to be in there.
Yep.
And if for some reason the conversation wasn't that explicit, that piece didn't always make it in, because news gathering was just harder. And so you could get X, Y element, but you couldn't get Z. And so at 11, we'd be like, wait, what happened to Z? Well, you know, you couldn't get Z. There were just too many barriers to getting it. And I think the other time when it was really challenging and it was clear the limitations of remote work was during breaking news situations, whether it was the protests, or, and I'm trying to think of what happened recently, but there would be this game of telephone, literally, where news is breaking. There's a producer at home who has to make a decision and has to relay that decision to a producer who's in the control room, who then relays it to us.
Right.
Typically, it'd be, you know, you're in the building, you see it on the monitor, or you're watching it come in via satellite or microwave, and you're telling us in real time. And sometimes that delay created real problems. You know, we'd be like, so we're going to go to some breaking news right now. And, you know, and you're like,
and you'd have to kill a little time.
stall a little.
We'll be broken. Yeah. So I would say those are two of the most obvious examples where, you know, not being together and not having the physical cohesion as a team made it harder, certainly, to tell a story.
You hit on two things, both, you know, ideation. It feels like a newsroom. I've never worked in this space. One of my favorite TV shows is about it. I'm going to ask you about that later, because I'm just very curious if it was at all indicative of your day to day. But the ideation is, I think, something that a lot of businesses do, whether you're in marketing or product or engineering. You know, you're kind of doing that roundtable or scrum meeting, and having that ability to sit down and explore with one another. The fast pace, and you guys probably move faster than anybody when it comes to ideating in the stories and what blocks they're going in, et cetera. That had to be a huge challenge in delaying or doing that all over Zoom. Did that just all move to remote Zoom meetings every morning? Roundtable?
Not even Zoom. So ours, I guess technically it is Zoom. You're right. People would be all together. So there'd be one in the morning, and then our meeting would be in the afternoon. And yeah, the reporters would be in their cars in the parking lot or at home. We would be in the building. The producer was typically at home.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, everybody was all over the place for those meetings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wild. I mean, ideation, it becomes very challenging and very, I'm sure, stressful. How did the people take it when they had to had to work remotely like that?
I think that was, you know, it's interesting. I think it's sort of a multifaceted answer, not to make it too complicated. But I think on the one hand, there was peace of mind in knowing that as a reporter, your movements were limited. So your exposure to the virus was going to be less than it would be if you were doing everything in person. So I think in that respect, there was some relief in that. By the same token, it also, you have the challenges of technology from home. You know, is your link good? Is this person's background good? Is their shot backlit so that you can't see them? You know, there were all kinds of things that typically you would not have to worry about.
Yeah.
On the other hand, another thing that worked really well was that people you wanted to interview who might otherwise be very, very hard to get to suddenly were quite reachable because they were home. You know, and I think of Ashish Jha at Brown University, who, you know, has been everywhere, and provided so much good information every single day, so many news organizations, such a total rock star. You know, he never could have done that many interviews if everyone had come to his office, because he never would have been able to do anything else. So the fact
that he was on like a press junket, he couldn't do that. Right. Yeah,
exactly. There's no way. So, you know, it worked both ways. But I do think in some ways it was very stressful because everything was new. And I am sure there was a great deal of pressure that these reporters and photographers felt about producing the same quality story with the limitations of COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I think there were pluses and definitely challenges. And now as we kind of come back together, we don't have a date for which everyone will be in the building. Or if we do, I don't know what it is. but I don't think we have that yet, because I have been checking my email regularly. But I, you know, that's an adjustment too. And so it'll be interesting to see when we all come back together again, how seamless that is. But I know that there will be a feeling of relief.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So I'm going to shift things a little bit, just because a lot of how I think of you as well is how much time you donate to all kinds of different charities and events. And that's something you mentioned, you know, that the technology was able to bring people far apart, kind of close. And that's something we found as well. We've over the last year had the opportunity to do some outreach and some charitable events. Like I taught a course for adults with autism and Asperger's, and in able to do that, it was challenging being virtual, but so fulfilling. And it was also really cool because it wasn't like we had to get all those people in one room, which you normally would do in a class. But we had people zooming in from Texas, from California, from New York, all at that same time every week. And it just became this magical thing that wouldn't have happened. I know that you obviously the Pan Mass Challenge, you're pretty involved with that. I know that you do. Is it the Boys and Girls Club or is it?
Boys and Girls Clubs of Dorchester. Yes.
Oh, Dorchester. Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then Big Sister Boston.
So I'd love to just, you know, because I would think particularly people who are involved with that as both volunteers and also people who are just, you know, members of any of those organizations, I would think look to you a little bit kind of as a voice, as a leader. How do you shoulder that burden, you know, because there's going to be a lot of pressure to be on and a strong voice and a strong leader all the time when anybody sees you. So, you know, some of us in leadership roles, we get the chance to decompress, I think, a little bit more, or not always have to be in that spotlight. What do you think, you know, how do you handle that? And what do you think makes it, you know, makes you able to do it so well?
I think, you know, when I first moved to Boston now 21 years ago, I felt that the philanthropic community was so welcoming. I felt like I learned so much about Boston through people who involved me in events. Globe Santa was a great example. And over time, you know, you realize that you can't, there are countless incredible organizations and you want to do everything you can for everybody. But at some point you're like, you know what, I probably have to make some choices. And so I have connected with, let's say, a half a dozen groups. And I feel like with each of those groups, I could talk to you about their mission and about what sets them apart without any notes. And that is sort of my new litmus test for what I should be doing. I want to continue to learn about groups, and I enjoy hearing about the different ways in which people are trying to make life better for other people in this area. And so I'm always open to other things, but I think it's really important at this point that I be able to identify what is it about this group that aligns with my values. that right. strikes me as something that, you know, I want to be an advocate for this group. And I feel very lucky to be able to do that. And I also, you know, because so many of these groups are moving the needle, for example, the PanMass Challenge, the advancements that have been made with cancer research and treatment, even in a relatively short period of time, it makes it so endlessly interesting to me, too, that I feel like just sort of from a growth mindset, it's good for my soul. I like to be helpful. I like to learn these things. And to the extent that I can use my voice to advance their cause, makes me feel very fortunate. And it also sort of takes me out of myself a bit, if that makes sense. You know, it's all of these things they're all bigger than any one of us. And there is a feeling of partnering. I guess it's teamwork in that arena as well that feels really good, you know, and the difference that people make when they're all together. Each of us makes a difference, but the collective power of our energy is pretty great. And seeing that is really rewarding. It's, you know, for all of the unfortunate or bad news stories we have to tell, so many of these organizations have really good stories. Now, they might be born of situations or diagnoses that are really sad, but what they're doing to lift people up and to create change in our community is pretty profound. And so to be able to have the privilege of being involved with those groups sort of takes some of the pain away from the negative or sad stories that we unfortunately have to share too often on the news.
Right. I think what an interesting balance, because I would think it brings so much positivity in when you also sometimes have to be almost a leadership or leading voice delivering news that isn't so good. Like I remember with the Marathon bombing, like you were right that, you know, talk about being thrown into thinking it's going to be this joyous celebration as it is all the time. And suddenly, oh no, it's, I don't know what's going on. We don't know what's happening, but I'm here and I've got to sort of bring information and a voice to people. I mean, what an awesome task.
I got to tell you,
I don't mean awesome as in good, as in Boston awesome. I mean,
right, awesome, right.
Like,
I mean,
pretty like huge task.
You know, it's interesting. I think that is one of those instances in which sort of the muscle memory of one's career really serves you well, because in that moment, I could tell you the things that were going on in my head. You know, it was as varied as, do I stay on this flimsy metal media bridge above the explosions, or do I have a better chance of surviving the next explosion if I get off this? Like, I tend to be a bit of a catastrophist, despite my rosy demeanor. So I was sure there would be other explosions. You know, how will my husband know that I really wanted to get off this bridge, I mean, it's amazing how many thoughts you can have in a very short period of time, in a moment like that. And yet what never crossed my mind really was totally getting out of there. You know, and I think about that, I'm like, well, you know, as everyone is running one direction, you know, the 19 of us who were there were sort of trying to make our way down the street, which was utter chaos and truly the most horrible situation, as you can imagine, that I've ever experienced. And it took me a year to go back and listen to what I sounded like in that first phone interview that I did with the station. Our helicopter was above the scene. And the key was, you know, we have to get on TV and we have to give people information. We haven't talked to any officials, so this is going to rely exclusively on what you have experienced. And I remember I couldn't dial the phone. I can talk, but somebody needs to dial a phone because my brain won't process that, but I think I can speak. And it took me a good year to go back and to hear what that sounded like. And it really startled me in that I remembered being very conscious of not wanting to share every detail, because I wanted to spare people some of the graphic nature of what I was seeing. And yet I also knew that people needed to know how bad this was, and that there was under no circumstances should they try to come to that finish line. You know, we had all people all over the course, and there were family members who were worried about people. And, you know, I remembered having those competing thoughts. And so when I went back and I heard it a year later, I thought, wow, I don't recognize that voice. I don't recognize that tone in my voice. And it was very startling. So I think everything was sort of coming out the way it was being processed in my head. And I said, I said more than I realized. But it was definitely authentic to that moment and that sort of need to provide information, but also to sort of spare people some of that, at least for that moment.
Yeah. What a moment in like crisis leadership. I mean, I think good leaders kind of do what you just said, is like, what, you know, I need to get the information out that people need to know, but not too much. because you either don't want them to go, you know, you don't want them to do the wrong thing, you know?
Right.
Or overreact.
And, you know, the truth was, I hadn't had an opportunity to talk to anyone in an official capacity. So I could say, I don't believe there's any way that that was anything other than an intentional explosion, because I saw the trajectory of the explosion and it was nowhere near a manhole cover or anything that would have been an accident. But, you know, I hadn't cleared that with an official. So I had to, everything had to be couched through, this is what I am observing and observed 5 minutes ago.
You know? Right. Wow. That's crazy. So just shifting up a little bit, not to turn back to a little bit of positivity, you know,
I am happy to go there.
Obviously, you know, over the years, you've had the chance to interview a bunch of different people. You know, when it comes to, because we focus a lot on teamwork and leadership, I'm just interested in anybody that you've either interviewed or had the chance to talk with, you know, has any one individual, or maybe just it's a characteristic of a type of individual that stands out as this person or this group knows how to work together or knows how to lead, knows how to be a functional, great team?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. You know, in an interview, what I enjoy the most, what I appreciate the most is a willingness to be sort of fluid and nimble and to go where the conversation goes. And appearing on camera is not something that is first nature for a lot of people. So it is understandable, you know, when we get nervous, we tend to tighten up a little bit. And so what makes for a really good interview, and I think an interview that then also benefits the viewer, is an interview with somebody who is willing to share and reveal, you know, I mean, and so I'm trying to think of good examples of teamwork and leadership. I think actually, you know, if we go back, not to dwell there, but if we go back to the teamwork of all the law enforcement agencies after the Marathon bombing, that was pretty unprecedented in a lot of ways, but they had trained for that. And
yes.
So one of the real lessons, I think, beyond the law enforcement field was that the training that we do in whatever field that feels sometimes unnecessary benefits us in ways that we cannot imagine. For example, I'm going off topic slightly, but the other night, you know, David Wade and I spent the last 15 months sitting on desks that were 20 feet apart. And after the state reopened and we were both fully vaccinated, the decision was made to put us back on the same desk again, which we both wanted, because you read the other person's body language much better when they're 3 feet from you than when they're 20, you know,
right.
Looking around the corner of the set. I'm like, does he want to talk right now? I can't tell. Or maybe he's just shifting in his chair and I'm doing it all out of my peripheral vision. every night at 8 o'clock for a week, we would rehearse different shots. And, you know, there were moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, we're rehearsing shots we did for a decade. And yet, you know what? There was real value in that, because when we actually did it for real, it was like, oh yeah, this is how this is going to go. You're going to be there. I'm going to be here. We're going to be looking at two different cameras, which is a little bit unnatural, but that's what we need to do right now. And had we not done that, I think there would have been some very awkward moments on television where you would have said, where is she looking right now? There's no camera over there. Anyway, so getting back to good interviews, I think whenever people have an opportunity to talk about the ways in which they work together, they're very proud. So those are generally really good interviews. And, you know, in talking with members of the law enforcement community, and I would say the clergy community, so, you know, rabbis, priests, reverends, also after the Marathon bombing, the ways in which they work to bring their communities together and develop a sort of understanding and to heal was really great. Like, I mean, I really appreciated that. And I think we all benefit from that. Hearing ways that people work together in really challenging situations. I think there are little points of enlightenment there that we can all take from that. So
yeah.
I have to say that those were some of the best. I also, you know, just as an aside, I mean, of people I really enjoyed talking to, I did enjoy talking with President Obama. It was a brief interview, but it was just the two of us, so I enjoyed that very much. He had only good things to say about Boston, so I liked that. I'll tell you, Will Smith is a great interview because he likes people and he likes to share stories. And so he's an entertainer, so you would sort of expect that. But there's more humor and joining with him than there is ego. So it makes him really a delightful person to talk to.
Yeah, I can see that because I've had the opportunity to meet a fair amount of people in the entertainment industry and they're not all like that.
they are not all like that.
And some are. Like, I got to meet Dennis Franz, and now we're going back a ways to, like, NYPD Blue or whatever. But, and what a genuine, nice, authentic, we were just having a conversation, like he wasn't hugely famous, you know, he's just this great, and then I've had others, and I won't care to drop names of who has not been that great, but it really is, when you have someone that they're just, and I think Will Smith is like that, he's just authentic, he's comfortable with who he is, and he is willing to share and do, I don't know, he strikes me that, I've not met him, but that he would be a great interview.
Yeah, and you know who else I would say, and I really appreciated this, I've appreciated this in the past, but I've also appreciated it during the pandemic. Boston chefs, Joanne Chang from Flower Bakery, Tiffany Faison, you know, we have some really wonderful and giving people in our community. And the way that they talk about their teams, their colleagues, how they banded together, I always appreciate, you know, that they're, because people are always, as you know, because this is your career, people are figuring out how to make different personalities work to the benefit of an organization. Bring the best out of everybody, so that, you know, the company, the team rises to the top. And that is really hard because people have strong personalities and opinions, and there are lots of things you have to work through. But when you do work through it, the benefits are so tremendous that I think, like, we want to hear those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned the emergency response to the marathon bombing. So I was about, I had gone to the Red Sox game that day. And so I was about probably a mile away from things when it happened. And just the amount of sirens that went on, it was almost like, obviously you were right there and heard and saw things go off. But it was one of those, like, you hear a siren, you hear another siren, you hear another siren. And suddenly you, same thing, something intentionally bad is going on right now. This is not, something wrong is wrong. And I was with my sister-in-law, who's a police officer, not in Boston, but just has that instinct as well. And so we didn't head in right in, but along the outskirts of it, you know, because she wanted to see what, you know, can I help? Can I, what's going on? But without getting, you know, too much in the way. And the fact that even just a couple blocks away, they suddenly had pop-up medical tents and personnel. And, like, it was just, I didn't realize we had all those resources. Like, they just popped up out of nowhere. It was so amid this travesty and awfulness were these great moments of, wow, people are trained and they're working together and they're helping people and they're saving lives in an instant. It was crazy to see.
Right. I mean, you think about the fact that every single person who made it to a Boston hospital that day survived is just, I mean, that is phenomenal. That's a testament to all that training and good coordination.
Yeah, and good leadership. Yep. Yep. Well, I will have to say too, you know, as we wind down the interview a little bit, I'm such a, you know, now I'm kind of fanboying here that I'm a fan of yours, but, you know, I appreciate all that you do for certainly the city and all the organizations you work with, because I know I even probably like 6 months ago now, 8 months ago, as Eric and I were thinking about how can we be helpful to people right now, particularly when our business tends to be more driven by people getting together in person, although we do some virtual as well, is that, the first person I thought of to connect me to people making a difference was you. So I reached out and said, you know, who could use some resiliency training right now? Who can we contact to just blow off steam and you know, do what we do for free to just help people get through this time? And so I just, you know, you're the first person I thought of. So, and for good reason, because you connected me to a few different places. So thank you.
Well, I was delighted to, you know, to get your email and that because you're so good at what you do, and I know people really appreciated it, and particularly at that time too, to have something else to think about and to work on was really a gift.
I'm immediately fanboying as well right now, and I know I haven't said much and I've been more observing, but Lisa, two things that I just picked up on: you found something in yourself that in you hit on something about culture, right, and the way you give back and the way you dedicate time to causes above and beyond yourself. You've recognized what is it that you value and how do you align to a mission statement that is clear and concise for you to process, understand, and buy into. I think people in any profession have a hard time defining what are my core values and how do I align that to a cause bigger and better than myself. And I think that's a big thing that we see when companies want to do charitable work, and it's a critical thing for companies to define their culture and their core values as well, so that they can attract the right talent to follow their mission and fall in line and get that sense of I'm doing work, but I don't really feel like I'm working because I am part of this organization that defines this culture and want to move this sort of culture or vision forward. driving a culture or setting a vision and mission for a company. I think a lot of organizations miss that or lose that. And the second thing that you mentioned too, is the sense of community in the business world and in the companies and the corporations all around New England and the greater Boston area. You know, when things don't go right, you don't win every deal, or the business doesn't take off every year. Sometimes you have a down year. Sometimes things go wrong. You have to go through layoffs. I don't know if companies actually provide that sense of community for people in a way that you just described, the way the law enforcement does or the clergy did in that time of need, in that time of crisis. These are two big lessons that just, this is why I'm fanboying. I'm like, gosh, she has such a great perspective and appreciation for how these things work that I think more and more people can and should learn from. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I was curious about your background and how did you get into this line of business that you're like, I want to be in the business of sharing information with people and being the voice for people or for a community, because there's a core value there that makes a huge difference.
You know, I don't even think I would have been able to put that fine a point on it when I knew I wanted to do it. But my parents were both English teachers. And I grew up in Idaho, which is and like sort of middle of nowhere Idaho. It was a college town, but it was really in the middle of nowhere. And we got two channels. We got PBS and CBS. And so I watched Sesame Street and my parents watched the CBS Evening News. And that was the only thing on. So I watched that with them. And I think it's somewhere along the line in those formative years when you're seeing what is valued in your family, news and sharing information and storytelling was valuable. And I also enjoyed it. And there was really nothing else I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to be a journalist. I don't know if I knew that I wanted it necessarily to be in TV until maybe I shot my earliest stories in, you know, I don't know, high school or junior high, middle school. But what I quickly discovered was that the feeling of collaboration that you have working with people, particularly when it's, you know, you're reporting and you're working with a photographer and then you're working with an editor and you're telling a story, but you're sort of making a little movie. Mm-hmm. And you have to make decisions about what goes in that little movie and what do you share. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed knowing where I lived by virtue of doing these stories and anchoring. So I liked feeling of a place, and this is the community piece. I really liked feeling a part of where I worked and having a responsibility to that place. And that's, it never gets less important. Like I only find myself asking as we tell stories, like, is this how we want to tell this? You know, there were times during the pandemic where, you know, we would say Massachusetts is doing, you know, our numbers are great and we've had fewer infections than we have in 6 months, but you know, we can't let down our guard. And that's very important information. But it's like, you know what? We have all been through such a slog. Let's celebrate these milestones. And let's not go over the top, but let's let people exhale for a minute here with some of these stories before we, you know, we hit them on the head with, but you better not take that mask off. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, no, you're outside. Take the mask off. Are you fully vaccinated? So I do think that one of the things I enjoy most about the job here and why I've never wanted to leave Boston once I arrived here was just the feeling in this community. I love the history. I love the innovation. I love the way people take care of one another. I love sort of the physicality of the city. It's just, it's a really rewarding place to work. And I really enjoy the people I work with. So it fires for me. It fires on all cylinders. The things that I need to feel like, you know, I'm alive and learning and growing and evolving, all it's all here. So I feel very lucky.
Well, I feel very fortunate to have this opportunity to chat with you and get to know you too, because we share that both being from this area as well. And then the services that we provide, you know, wanting to believing in the power of the team, right? Believing in the power of people, not just a single person. You couldn't produce that story all by yourself. You probably figured that out early in your career. And then you're like, oh man, this is, I need to work with these people and through the good stories and the bad. It was just eye-opening. So I know we're past time, but thank you.
Yeah. I'm sorry to monopolize your time so much. I'm sure you have other things a little more important to get back to. So
that's okay. Like, I'll slide into the editorial meeting on Zoom. I'll be like, hey, I'm here now. But
that's right.
This has been such a delight. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. And I love what you're doing.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Well, we love what you're doing too. So there you go.
I appreciate it. Thanks for staying up late. Right. Thanks so much, Chet. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks.
All right. Take care.